morning, everybody. Welcome to the Men's Mental Health Show. We had Gary Sims lined up today, Chief Inspector, the Chief, my arch nemesis. I call him that because when I say mistakes are the greatest things in life, he looks at me and says, not if you're making the same ones over and over, Bradley. Yeah. But it's good fun. Unfortunately, him and his lovely wife have come down with COVID. So thanks, Gaz, for taking one for the team there and not bringing that into the studio.
Yeah, thanks for finding out before you came in.
Good of you, mate. But speedy recovery, rest up, plenty of water. You know the drill, mate. And watch those mistakes. Great show last week. We're just talking about that. We had Nick Danter came on, and a pretty good response through the platforms of and through Facebook of views. So thank you to those loyal listeners and to the new listeners that have come on board. Appreciate it, and sending much love to you guys. But Nick, geez, I tell you what, he can write some fantastic songs, can't he, Boadster? It was.
One of the lines that leapt out for me was when he's talking about the black dog, and he's talking about his own black dog, but also that belongs to others. And he said in the lyrics, I will be there with you. Yeah. And he repeated that on a number of occasions, I will be there with you. And we sort of picked that up about what a powerful relational stance, you know, to say, I will be there with you. And I thought that was one of the things that sort of stayed in my mind. If all of us could sort of learn to be there with each other, and Alan Watts talks to that as well. It is a powerful relational field of joining, connection, all those things that we've been talking about that erode mental health and well-being. Yeah. If we aren't connected or can't stand with others to be there with you, that awful loneliness that comes out of that actually does undermine a sense of participation in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a modern context, we're quick to condemn others, but loath to look at our own weaknesses or own shadow or own rage or, so we keep bypassing our own struggles. And keep naming the struggles of others. There you go. Yeah. So that's kind of what I'm sitting with this morning. Yeah. Is how can I? What Alan Watts says that if we can't see our own shadow, we segregate our shadow, and that take no ownership of it, and never speak of it to others, we become less human.
That's right. And then we do things like we mentioned all the time, isolate and,
and judge others.
Negative. And look, good morning, Christian.
Good morning.
Christian Mortensen is here. Of course, we're going to have a first responder show today. Gary's got a new role with Fortem Australia, Fortem.
What is Fortem?
Well, I think we'll wait. Gaz will be on in a week or two, but I looked into a little bit on the website. It's mental health stuff, which is great.
I think it's about supporting first responders.
First responders and mental health, yeah.
Okay.
So it would have been which we'll try and do. We'll try and get both Moz or Christian and...
I've actually... I know a few friends of mine have accessed their services.
Yeah.
Had really good results. I was actually keen to talk to him, but we'll postpone that and chat another time.
Let's just go back to what you were saying and with Nick's song and there for you. And I'm going to put the Moz Christian on the spot here because just touch base, sort of checked in, and you were right with this. I sent him a note and I said, hey man, Gary Sims coming on, Chief Inspector down here at Katoomba Police. It'd be wonderful if we did a show. We did a four of us. And the response I got was, it was completely left field from Moz. It had been a massive week. And
no, I've had a few big weeks, actually, since I think it was a couple of months ago that I was on. And I've been busy, as is always the case, busy. But I've had a few big jobs over the last weeks. In fact, I did a job with Gary last weekend.
Okay.
We did the truck rollover at Mount Victoria. And we both ended up on that job. And fortunately for the people who were on that job, for the truck driver and the driver, They weren't catastrophically injured, but it was a very near miss for both of them.
Yeah, mate, I tell you, from what I saw and heard from someone,
it was a dramatic scene, I've got to say.
Yeah.
A truck on fire, rolled over on its side, the cabin on fire, the bush on fire, diesel pouring down the gutters on fire.
Oh, wow.
The truck driver just managed to extricate himself out of the cabin before he was incinerated, and just basically managed to get out with some minor injuries. It was not... Yeah, he wasn't at fault. And the driver of the other vehicle, she also... she was banged up, but we managed to get her out. But look, it was arriving on the scene... arriving on the scene, we... it was a... Yeah, everything was on fire. And... made us take the back seat for a while as we tried to work out what was going on. And then we ended up airlifting the occupant of the vehicle down to hospital, and she's in a stable condition, as I understand, and doing pretty well. Right. Thank God for that.
Yeah.
But what had happened was you messaged me, and then the night before I had gone to a relative or a friend of mine who passed away and ended up trying to resuscitate him. And in the middle of the night, and I was unsuccessful.
Mm.
So it wasn't a great situation to be involved with, but it was a good situation in that I knew the family very well. He was the grandfather to my two boys, and on my ex-partner's side, and we had a really good crack at trying to revive him, and unfortunately, he passed away. And the strange thing about the job was that I had kind of expected it to happen. I had a bit of an intuition maybe a month ago.
Wow.
Right. That it was,
something was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I was going to get called to that house.
Wow.
And I just had a really bad feeling about it and sort of dismissed that as just being a sort of a flight of fancy or something imaginative maybe, or something along those lines that I was... wasn't something to pay much attention to.
Yeah.
So when the job happened, and it happened at 3 o'clock in the morning, so I got, we had just basically sat down on station after being busy all night, phone rings, we've got a cardiac arrest. I looked at the address and then straight away realised.
You knew.
Oh, I knew straight away that what I had intuited a month or two previously was about to unfold.
Mm.
So my work partner was a new paramedic, fortunately a very experienced nurse, but a new paramedic.
Right.
And I keyed her up as to what I thought was going to happen and what was going on and my relationship to that family and the complexities associated with those interpersonal relationships.
Yeah.
Because they're not directly related to me, but they'd been my family for, previous relationship for about 2 decades.
Yeah.
So, and he was like my father-in-law. So I knew him pretty well. Anyway, we went and we worked on him, and it was a little strange stepping into that house. I hadn't been in that house for close to 6 or 7 years, and it was sort of a bit of a no-go zone for me for a bit of a while, and interacting with the family there was a no-go for a long time. And then suddenly here I am in the role of, paramedic, intensive care paramedic on scene trying to resuscitate him.
But it goes right through the armour. The armour of everything of what you do. I mean,
falls off.
That's right. And now you're stripped bare
and trying to save his life. Knowing what I know now and seeing what was going on clinically and just thinking, look, this is not going to end up good. This is not going to end up well. I can't see this ending up with being a rescue. And anyway, we ended up transporting him up to hospital and then having to give the handover to the hospital, explaining my relationship to the man and then the family coming in. And it was all a bit much.
All sorts of things going through your head, mate.
Yeah, totally.
And from all accounts, mate, kudos and I can't imagine for one moment what you were going through, but you worked for some time on this. You must have been absolutely spent
Well, we worked pretty hard on him. We worked on him for about an hour and a half.
Whoa.
Which is well beyond what we would normally work on. Yeah, and because it was because of those personal relationships.
Yeah.
And
I'm sorry.
But that's okay.
To do this to you, mate. It's...
But look, that working in your community in this role is both at times very difficult and at times an absolute privilege. And in many ways, this was a privilege.
Yeah.
This is the way I'd like to perceive it. Yeah. That I got an opportunity to really make a difference.
Mm.
I didn't make a difference for him, but what I did do is I made a big difference to his wife.
And that was what I sort of picked up, right? Yeah. So, you know, we texted and then you know, I think it was a few days later you thought, well, I'll give him a call. Because after you texted me, I thought, I'll check in. And the wonderful thing, and this is much to your credit, and just a fantastic skill that is such a great example for many men, including myself, is the positive that you drew out of this was the bind or the glue, I guess, that has brought you closer together. The mother of your son.
My mother-in-law, you know, had... been a little cool and distant to me. She's not my current mother-in-law, but she had been for some time, for a long time. When my ex and I separated, understandably, she was on my ex's side. And of course, and I gave her space and that sort of thing. But when I saw her in the community, there was always a bit of a scowl.
Yeah.
And a bit of a...
Yeah, a disappointing look.
Kind of thing, a bit of a funny look. And she didn't really, you know, welcome me. But here I was suddenly in her home and trying to resuscitate her husband of 40 years.
Wow.
So it was powerful.
Yeah.
But in the end, look, the positive that's come out of that is that she got to see a side of me and a side of my work that's very important.
Yeah.
And she was very, very grateful.
Yeah.
And very kind and very... Also, she was in a very vulnerable state. And I wish, send my condolences, and it was upsetting, and wish that there was a better outcome for her partner. And in the end, I feel like we have crossed a bit of a bridge there in terms of our relationship as well, and that we're in a better place too. So since then, I've sent her flowers and called her and seen how she's going and that sort of thing, just to check in on her and that sort of thing, which is I never would have done had I not actually been directly involved in the resuscitation. So I hope something positive comes of that, and I hope something positive would come of you know, dealing with ex-partners can be difficult, as we know.
Thanks, mate. To just be vulnerable and to be so open is wonderful. It's a fitting example of how we've got to be. I wish I could be like that all the time. Unfortunately, I'm not. You think I could be or should be, but the truth is I'm not.
Are we all the time.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes when it will come out, it'll come out during those emotions of what Bodie often refers to as mad, bad, or sad. And it's often, you know, the toxicity is vomited on somebody else, and then, you know, lucky for me, that somebody else often says, come on, mate, there's something behind this. But kudos, man. Yeah, thanks. And
well, look, the work that I do is I'm in a very privileged position in that I get to participate in ways that are not, which are unusual in the community, and we get to see people in a very vulnerable state.
Yeah.
And I guess it means we pay attention to the subtle things, and the I try to find the positives in life as well. It's important that in the midst of all of this is just reality. This is just what happens around us all the time. People are passing away. People are getting sick. People are getting injured.
Yeah.
And what it means for me, the lessons that I draw from that.
Yeah.
Are about positivity and living each day in a positive way and in a full and engaged way.
Yeah.
Appreciate the good times while you have those good times. Yeah. I don't want to get, you know, I know now sometimes I'll be sitting and thinking, you know, here am I in my mid-50s. I remember what life was like back when I was in my 20s. How good was life then? I think, well, actually, life's really good now.
Yeah.
Well, that's really good now. And appreciate it now, because when I'm 70, in my 70s, or when I'm in my 80s or 90s, I'll be looking back to the times when I was like, geez, back when I was in my 50s, life was so good then.
Yeah.
You know, and the point is that life is good all the time if you choose to look at it like that.
Yeah. You know, absolutely. It's a terrific... Spot on, man. Absolutely. Well said. I see that. And I do that sometimes. And often I go the other way sometimes and go, God, look at me now. You know, I look 10 years bloody older than I actually am sometimes. But however it is, you know, and you can concentrate so many times, I guess, on regrets, can't you?
That's right.
But, mate, I think you're a wonderful man. It was going to, you know, as I said with Gaz here, I was going to call the show Four Good Men, you know. Well, I was hoping another guest would come into my spot in that case, but...
No, I don't think so.
But it's... no, well said, hey, Bates?
Yeah. He's on the mark. That's fantastic. I mean, it's such rich insight that you're bringing to, you know, to the work. And, you know, I have been... had the privilege of hearing you talk about the difficulties of a past relationship and the challenges that had developed from it and the losses that you were feeling, particularly about... your children and the anxiety that that the story that they were hearing didn't reflect the person that you are. And what's astonishing, isn't it, is this event occurs in which you play a role which is such a part of you. It's built into your DNA to assist in that particular way that you do. And that you even had the intuition of it. I find that sort of kind of astonishing, you know, and we are good at intuition. We are good at the identifying the possibility of something happening. And often that is instrumental in making a shift that we can't in any other way. Yeah. You've been called out to the situation and been as diligent and as connected as you that you bring all the time to your work. Also, as a massive punctuation of a prior contraction. Mm. And I just think, what an incredible story, what an incredible... but it could only happen on the basis of your diligence and of your ex-mother-in-law's gratitude for what you brought to her husband, your father-in-law. And, you know, that's the leaven, isn't it? That's the thing that causes something else to happen, which restores connection.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I sit here and opposite Christian now, and I could still see the pain in his face, his tears, and yet to be on live radio and he's not uncomfortable with that, you know. It's happy. It's a normal feeling. He says, you know, and he understands that, and it's not something he's suppressing. And yeah, man.
There's some important lessons from a clinical perspective that are worth taking note of for men and for women, and that is understanding and paying attention to the subtle signs that are occurring within your body, which are the predictor of disease.
Right.
So what I'm describing here is that before we experience catastrophic life-ending events and critical near misses, with regards to illness, I'm not talking about with regards to trauma, but with regards to things like heart attacks and strokes, blood clots, septic events where you become infected with something, that sort of thing, there'll be changes that occur in the body and subtle signs that are telling you that things are not right.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
take us through a couple of those.
Okay, so I'm going to draw upon an example here. I was just chatting to a friend of mine who I haven't seen in some time. He's in his early 50s. He's just had a massive heart attack.
Wow.
Now, he's a very fit man and has lived a fairly clean living lifestyle, non-smoker, vegetarian... as I understand, and staying physically fit, but with a very strong family history of heart disease.
Right.
Okay, the genetic factors there, and they're unavoidable. And I had a conversation with him, and he's had almost died. He didn't. He managed to catch the heart attack as soon as it became very... he developed central chest heaviness, arm pain, shoulder pain, shortness of breath, and a sense of impending doom. Now that sense of impending doom that you get with a heart attack is a common symptom. Just the feeling like, oh my God, I'm about to die. He called Triple O. The paramedics came. This was down in Melbourne. They diagnosed that he was having a heart attack. He got sent to a cardiac hospital, and he ended up having a stent, a small medical device put into the artery of the heart to open up the artery of the heart.
Calcification, close
chart. Yeah, so that the blood supply to the heart muscle itself could be restored. And so on. But in the since then, what is described is that part of the heart has died. The wall of the heart has died. The
pericardium.
And the myocardium.
Sorry.
So the muscle of the heart. So now that will take a long time to recover from. And he will probably never recover to full functionality as the result of this event. Now, what he told me was that in the weeks leading up to this event occurring, he had episodes of chest tightness and he had episodes of shortness of breath. And if he had paid attention
then
to what was going on, he could have presented to hospital, not the GP. Like, if you've got chest tightness and you're short of breath, you should be calling Triple O and you should be going to hospital. They would have done an angiogram. They would have worked out that he had a narrowing of the artery that was going to then fully block, and he could have had that stent put in earlier and he could have avoided the whole heart attack in the first place. And what he said to me was on the phone was, Christian, I just realized that I'm really shit at understanding or paying attention to the subtle signs of what's going on inside my body. I had all these signs going on. I had chest pain. I was short of breath for no reason. And all of a sudden, I just didn't pay any attention to it and I had a heart attack. Now, the man who I attempted to resuscitate the other week, he also had some clinical indicators, as I understand, that were telling him that something catastrophic was about to occur. And I think it's something that's common in men, that where we have these indicators, a precursor symptoms that might occur in the weeks, an unexplained pain, a discomfort. It could be something like, depending on what condition we're talking about, like abdominal pain, a change in bowel habits, suddenly we're really, really fatigued. They're not always catastrophic events, but if we paid more attention to what was going on inside our bodies and really like, okay, this doesn't quite feel right, then it means if you're not feeling right, go get it checked out. Don't just ignore the symptoms. So see your GP, that's a good start. Now, if you can't get in to see your GP, and that's also a really terrible issue up here in the Blue Mountains, is we just have a real shortage of general practitioners. If you can't get in to see your GP, then present to if you need to the emergency department.
And I guess sorry to cut in there. I guess a lot of the time I've got a concave or incave chest. Sometimes I get pain.
Pectoris excavatum.
That's the one. Yes. Okay. Thank you. But and I'll get that chest pain. But I've had that on and off, throughout my life. And once it got really bad, I thought, oh, no, it'll go. I don't want to call the ambulance and find out this is just going to be I don't want to waste their time. I don't want to go and sit in hospital.
You're not wasting our time.
Because that's really the number one reason why blokes particularly.
You're not wasting our time at all. If you've got symptoms for something, especially something in relation to chest pain, you need to be calling.
Okay.
If it's not disappearing within 5 minutes, and if it's ongoing, it's escalating, then you need to be checked over. Because not everything in the chest, by the way, is a heart attack.
No,
it's not. So sometimes it'll be things like, it could be blood clots. That can be a small blood clot, or it can be a devastating and life-ending blood clot. Can be stuff with regards to the rib cage, as in just like you've sprung a rib or your back's
done
out.
Done some cartilage.
You've got a bit of inflammation in the cartilage. Well, the other thing we sometimes see is people who are having bouts of chest infection / pneumonia.
Yeah, pulmonary.
Pulmonary stuff. Yeah. Or it could be reflux.
Right.
And, and people often go, oh, I've got a bit of reflux in my chest. I feel a bit of chest heaviness and a bit of angina. Hang on, what's going on here? That doesn't feel right. I had another friend of mine up in Blackheath whose wife called me a couple of years ago and said, look, my partner, I won't say who it is, he's not well.
Right.
And I go, what's going on? She goes, oh, he's just a bit sweaty.
Oh, here we go.
Alarm bells.
Yeah.
He's a bit sweaty and he's got a bit of jaw pain.
Oh, yeah.
And I just read, oh, my God. Take an aspirin, call an ambulance immediately.
Right. And so what are we taking aspirin for again?
The aspirin is a it's a an antiplatelet drug.
Right.
So it's good to have aspirin on hand.
Sure.
It basically, you take one aspirin and it inhibits the blood platelets from binding. Okay. So if you've got a clot that's developing in a coronary artery, and what happens is the you get a little bit of a rupture in the wall of the blood vessel.
Yeah.
The body perceives that as the same way that a cut on the skin sure. would occur. And then you get an aggregation of blood platelets. They bind together
right.
and they form the beginnings of a clot. Now, on a cut on the skin, that stops you from bleeding.
Yeah.
If it's a rupture in a blood vessel in the heart, that stops the blood flow to the heart muscle.
Right, so it just keeps it...
So it inhibits... What it does is it means that the blood becomes slippery.
Yeah.
So okay. You don't get that binding of the blood platelets, and then you don't get the formation of a clot.
Okay. So every bloke and woman, every yes. man and woman should have a box of aspirin.
Should have a box of aspirin at home.
Okay, good.
And if you ring 000 and say, I've got chest pain, one of the first things I'll say to you is, have you got aspirin on hand? If you don't have any bleeding problems, then you need to take that aspirin.
Right. Okay. So
that's a good first aid sort of thing to do. As long as you haven't got some sort of active bleeding going on in your bowel or somewhere else, or you're allergic to it. Like, I'm allergic to aspirin.
Yeah.
I get hives if I have an aspirin. But if I was having a heart attack,
you'd have it.
I'd have it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And I'd take an antihistamine. So, and I just deal with it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but yeah, it's a life saving intervention. But
so anyway, as you were saying,
so this friend of mine, so he basically said, "Oh, he's sweaty. He's got some jaw pain, and he's nauseated."
Mm.
I should probably just put him to bed. He's just being, a bit of a hypochondriac. And I said, "No. Call the ambulance immediately." They did and diagnosed him. He was having a massive heart attack. He got sent down to Nepean, had stents put in. They said literally the heart was completely the blood vessel, the left anterior descending vessel, which is the main vessel in front of the heart.
Right?
Yeah. It was blocked. It was 99% blocked.
Wow.
It's a widow maker.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what a cardiologist said. I'm at 40 or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay.
Which they don't do anything until 70.
No, that's right. So, but pay attention to those things. So what I'm saying is pay attention to those subtle signs that something is going on. And go to your GP and get stuff checked out. You know, have a blood test.
Yes.
Make sure your cholesterol's right. Your blood pressure is right.
Sure.
Make sure your prostate-specific antigen, which is the PSA test.
Yep.
So you're checking your prostate.
Yes.
You know, they don't do a manual examination anymore. They do a blood test.
That's good.
It's a lot kinder.
Yes.
Make sure those things are all in order. Because you're going to be future-proofing everything, yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
To ensure your longevity and health and well-being.
Sure. And they're actually encouraging it, almost making it mandatory for men from the age of 40 now. It used to be 50.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm 40. I mean, I'm going in next. That was on the phone then. That was the surgical ward up at Katoomba saying I've got my colonoscopy coming up.
Yes,
I can't wait.
Well, yeah. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
What a pain in the ass it is, that procedure. It's
probably given a little bit back from what I've been expelling myself.
The bowel prep's not fun.
that's the part I really look forward to. Is the old pico prep.
Yeah, the pico prep. Love it. Not.
Yeah,
not at all. But yes, so look, sometimes you have to do some awkward things. You might have to get some blood drawn.
Yeah.
You might have to have a difficult conversation with a GP or with a health professional. Actually, I don't feel right. This isn't, something's going on here.
Yeah.
And it's more than likely it's something that's minor, but what you want to do is capture anything that's sinister.
Yeah.
And make sure that you can intervene. And look, the modern medicine's pretty amazing. When I started in the job 25 years ago, we would go to a cardiac arrest where somebody had a heart attack literally every four shifts. At least one in four shifts.
Wow.
Now, with changes in the management of heart attacks and with changes in medication and the advances that they've made.
The statins and cholesterol and HBPs.
With the statins, monitoring of that, with the advent and the development of the stenting that they do, which is opening up the blood vessels. Where they, and I've watched that procedure multiple times in real time. It's phenomenal to watch. The mortality rate associated with heart attacks has dropped significantly. So we rarely go to community cardiac arrests anymore in a younger population. Right. Obviously, people still are passing away. That's generally now because of age-related illness.
Yeah, right.
Things like, you know, strokes, COVID, sepsis and things like that.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, in an older population, you know, we're talking 80 to 90 plus, and people are living longer. It used to be rare to see men, for example, in their 90s. I think in the first 10 years of my job, I would rarely meet a man, you know, in a clinical setting who was in their 90s. And now I see men who are functional in their 90s, living in the community and living their best lives.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's more and
getting
more
around like 60-year-olds.
Getting around like 60-year-olds, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And that's because of the development and the preemptive stuff that's
sure.
being done.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Hey, I want to chip in here with you, Boats. Like, because you're 73, you're 74 December, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's fair to say, you're as fit a 73-year-old as I know. I mean, you're always active. You're as fit as they come, and you're playing badminton, and it's something that gets the cardio going. But it still doesn't make you, you know, invisible to this stuff. You know.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
So what, I guess, do you go for your checkups? You do all of that regularly? And
No, I'm one of these good blokes that Christian's talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Every time I pass a doctor's sort of surgery.
That's right.
I'm sort of taking notes as we're...
Yeah.
Go and see the doc.
So this is a good opportunity, I guess, to get that PSA test.
Yeah, it's just a blood test.
Yeah.
No gloves required.
No, yeah. That's an important one.
A lubed finger, forget it.
Yeah, don't go there. Assume the position. Not doing this.
He's shaking his head. he's squeezing his eyes tightly together.
It's like the thought of mushrooms to me. I just can't stand it. I'm my old man, 78, and I've noticed he's gone really grey, but he's good-looking bloke for his age, or well-preserved, much like Blue and Boatster are, but they're active, you know, they're getting out and about, you know, the 90 is the new 70, you know, and the 70 is like 50, but I mean, you'd be fitter than me, you know, I'm 20 years, 20
years. Yeah, I did
plus
about 2 hours of shoveling soil yesterday, just to, because I'm actually creating a new garden bed, because I want to get back to growing my own veggies. I love carrots that come straight out of the ground, you know, the sweetness, the crispness of it all, beans, you know, there's a whole raft of stuff, there's great silver beet and spinach that you can grow that gives you a good iron sort of kind of source of iron, that sort of stuff. Roughage, you know, keep the bowel functioning sort of kind of well. I think it's all important things.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking after my daughter's boyfriend's dog, it's a husky, Kelpie Cross.
Oh, wow.
It's 7 years old, so it's not as mad as the Medax.
But likes
long walks.
Walks, I was going to say, yeah. So it won't like today because it's so hot, but they love it.
So probably my walking will increase because on a daily basis, the dog will want at least a 5K, 6K, 7K, 8K walk.
Yeah.
And I've got a few of them around at home, so, you know, I'm girding my loins, getting ready for a walking and walking. is a combination of cardiovascular fitness, but also meditative. You know, you have a chance to let your mind sort of wander.
Exercise.
Yeah, it is great exercise. Mm. And the dog's kind of pulling me along, you know what I mean?
And you get to socialise along the way too, don't you? You get to have a chat to the other dog walkers and meet the neighbours.
Absolutely. I think our physical fitness along with mental fitness is... good for men's health, and I think we're right on the money talking about this. And what I love is the subtle signs that we do get from our bodies. When you tweet something or something's going on, or we get a warning sign of something. We got to pay attention to those things. Yeah. Otherwise, we run the risk of going into forgetfulness or blindness. Sure. You know, we impose a sense of censorship and don't actually address the cues or the signs. Similar in our relationships, you know, if you shut your eyes to what's really going on in your relationship, you might start asking more questions of the other or of yourself. Or, you know, and I want to go to this poem. This is a beautiful poem by Hannah Emerson. I just came across her this morning, and she is non-speaking. She's the only sounds that come out of her is what you could describe as a kind of a sort of moaning sound. And so articulation of words is not possible for her.
How did you come across Hannah? Did you meet her? You know her? Is she local here, up here, or is she?
No. She's in the US of A.
Okay, I beg your pardon.
She's so quite profoundly autistic.
Okay.
But she, with the aid of computer and with people around her, these are her words, her poetry. So she's been able to access the mind of hers that is incredibly powerful.
Phenomenal.
So this is a small poem, but. It's titled Peripheral. Yes, I prefer the peripheral because it limits the vision. It does focus my attention. Direct looking is just too much killing of the moment. Looking oblique littles the moment into many helpful moments. Moment, moment. Moment, moment, keep in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's about attention, isn't it? And that's what we've been talking about today as well.
Paying
attention. But, you know, it's that old, yes, I prefer the peripheral.
Yeah.
She's not saying, looking directly into the sun.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, you're blind anyway.
Yeah.
But if you look to the side of something, is it a way into another deeper layer of meaning or reality?
Yes.
So that's the gift of that sort of line. And then looking oblique, we often say, I prefer talking to somebody who's looking directly at me.
Yeah.
But she's saying, you know, something else again. She's inviting another perspective of looking at something from an angle, and not frightening off the other by actually too direct an assumption about something going on here. It's like creating some space for the moment to reveal itself in the truth of it, rather than in the assumptions we might leap into because of our direct gaze.
Sure.
I think the example that she provides of I have a limitation, if you like, a disability, but she creates these beautiful poems that invite something out of us to recognize the gratitude that we must have for our reasonable ability to function. And she's had to dig into other layers of herself for retrieval of her wisdom. So it's a great teaching. I love that poem.
It's funny, it reminds me a little bit of the predator-prey relationship, because predators, carnivores, have their eyes mounted on the fronts of their heads for forward vision, for intense focus.
This is great.
Whereas prey animals, herbivores, have their eyes mounted on the sides of their heads so that they can be scanning obliquely, continuously, for danger.
And not often will a predator come at you straight on.
No. So the and it's a little bit about like the difference. And you know, here we are, we've got forward mounted eyes, right? So there's something that says something about in our evolution about our relationship to the we are the predator. That we can focus on things intently. The downside of that is though is that we forget to examine the peripheral.
Mm.
And to be looking obliquely and to be looking around at things and paying attention to the entirety of the situation.
You know, I was only talking in a text message to my son about moments and how moments come together and the importance of those moments. Those wonderful things that I remember when I was 16 and, just to pay attention to some of those moments and what they're doing and how they make you feel. And being in the moment, as Bodhi said towards the end there, it's so important.
We go into scenes, somebody calls 000 and we're going into a scene as a paramedic, and we have to make sort of rapid assessments about what is going on with that person, how sick they are, and whether there are other, what sorts of contributing factors are going on. Mm. And we, as we enter the scene and we enter someone's house or we enter a car accident or some sort of chaotic environment, what can happen is that junior paramedics will tend to come in and focus on what the chief complaint of what the patient said. So, you know, you introduce yourself. Hi, my name's Christian. Why have you called us today? What's going on? What seems to be the matter? Mm-hmm. And the person says, well, I'm short of breath, something along those lines, or I have chest pain. Mm. And then you begin, and you can start to begin to drill down on what is going on with that. Or, you know, for example, I've fallen and I've hurt my leg. Mm. But for more experienced paramedics, what we tend to do is that we tend to pull back a little bit at that stage and be examining the entirety of the scene, all the peripheral clues that you can pick up on that are actually building a picture without you actually having to ask. So it's things like, you know, there's an ashtray sitting on the table, or there's drug paraphernalia, or that the house is in a state of chaos, or that there are livestock or chickens even in the yard, or that there are birds, wild birds in the garden, like parrots, things like that, which actually build a picture of what is going on and can give us clues about to why a person is unwell. And I call that, although I don't know if it's necessarily correct, the Gestalt view. Does that make sense?
It does, because Gestalt is picking up on all the signals that we give, both mentally and psychologically and physically. And so you're examining the biggest picture possible in order to actually sort of navigate yourself into the situation.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
The Gestalt is a beautiful German word to describe the full embrace.
Fantastic. That's what I'm talking about, the Gestalt view. So we examine the entirety of the scene, and it gives us a great idea about what's going on. And that could be anything from the posture that a person has to the way they're communicating with us, their emotional state, the state of their family. So because, you know, and because we are complex and we have lots of human, you know, human relationships are just about the most complicated thing we do. But, you know, the attitude of other people to the scene and, you know, in relation to things like mental health jobs, when somebody says, you know, I'm depressed, for example, and, you know, I'm feeling suicidal, and you're trying to tease out what's going on and what's happening in this person's life. And we get the actual privilege of being in this person's home environment. It's a little harder when people are in hospital. They're removed. Like if they come to visit you, they're relating to you, then they're talking to you about their history, and you're trying to work out, or you're here in my space, but I'm trying to work out what's going on in your history that I can assist you with. But I get to actually be in their homes. I can see what's going on around inside their homes, the posters they've got on their walls. The walls are completely stained with mold. You've got a leaking roof, and it's a dark and depressing environment to even be in. You know, so you get to build those sort of gestalt picture. And I think, you know, that poem really speaks to paying attention to the peripheral stuff. And then you can then choose to instead of be the gazelle, like pay attention to your environment and see the movement going on the edges and the movement of the trees and the wind and what's happening around you. And then you can choose to be the cheetah. And then where you're focused in on a task, pay attention to that task. But don't forget, you also need to be a gazelle. And then pull back and pay attention to what else is going on around you. Then if you balance those two roles.
He's in fine touch, isn't he?
Description of wholeness.
He's right on. Sorry.
That's how we train. So that's what we train our paramedics to do, to be both the cheetah and the gazelle. At times you have to be the cheetah and be task focused, but you give the role of the gazelle to someone else. So you're in charge. I want you to sit back now. You're the team leader, and pay attention to what's going on in the entirety of the scene as I complete this very complex task, which might be managing an airway or doing drug medication therapy.
Such a wonderful career, isn't it? And skill building and all of those things.
And apparently you're not talking about a serial cheater, are you?
Just watch where he puts that card. He's got a card up his sleeve.
It's the Men's Mental Health Show. We're here with Christian Mortensen and...
he's pinched me on the butt.
And psychotherapist Bodie Marsden. Of course, you can get Bodie on 0424 416 969. We might just take a quick break and switch things up a little bit when we come back. Bodie's got another poem. We've got something a little more pertinent to what's going on around The Voice. So we might just sort of touch on that. You sent it to me a couple of days ago. It's an absolute Bobby Dazzler. But we'll just go to a quick break, just a couple of short messages from some of our sponsors. Back in a moment. It's the Men's Mental Health Show. Yeah, welcome back to the Men's Mental Health Show. Look, just before we went to the break, I mentioned we've got a bit of a change-up coming in. And I might go to you, Bodes, and I guess kick us off with this other poem, because there's a lot of little things in there that I picked up that are quite light. You know, and it's no secret that we're supporters here of The Voice, you know, for our reasons. But I also want to draw attention to something as I'm in a group on Facebook, and it's called Lawson Locals. And someone put up, you know, I've got this shirt, it doesn't fit me, and it was a Yes shirt. And my goodness gracious, the amount of hate people that said burn it and all of these things.
It's so divisive, isn't it?
Yeah, well, incredibly, geez, they're powerful people behind a keyboard that say these things. And I just put in a response regardless of, you know, what I said. I think I put something to the effect of, guys, for heaven's sake, it's a T-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, and it's being offered.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're a yes or whether you're a no, we don't need to just come up with so much anger, hatred.
Yeah.
And some of the thoughts, it's completely delusional. And I said, you know, I don't get upset when I see someone wearing a Neil Diamond shirt. I don't like Neil Diamond, but I don't.
Yeah.
You know, what's the difference, you know? So over to you, Boatstar.
Probably before I read it, I'll start off with Alan Watts. Now, he was an American poet and writer, and he really struggled with alcohol. And he openly admitted that that despite being a seeker of truth and enlightenment, he had a great, also powerful addiction to alcohol, and that at times that would cause him significant problems in his relationships and his ability to stay true to the work he really wanted to do. And he describes in this paragraph, he says, at the moment we live in this epoch of self-righteousness, zeal with which people would rather feel right than understand the situation, the context, the motives and vulnerabilities behind their actions, the basic fact of the other. So what he's inviting us in that statement is to become more aware of when someone has a different view to you, what might be the context of how they've arrived at that view, the motives, what are they vulnerable about that leads them to take a line or an idea. The basic fact of the other. I just love that, as you said. And what he's saying is that growling beneath it all is our own aversion to our own imperfections. We would rather look away and towards the fault of the other.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Than to step into our own shadow. Now, imagine the conversation we might begin to have if we started to open up a curiosity about our own context, how we've arrived at a place, and talk to another. And they too would sit into their vulnerability or context and say, how I've arrived at this position and how might we shift? Now, a lot of people have been invited by people who have a yes perspective to say, why don't you do a bit more reading and come back to me? Why don't you do some more understanding and come back to me? And people who have said, I'll do that. So rather than come from opinion or some new information I've received, or somebody said, well, being no is the best position to take in this rubbishy thing called a referendum, they have read more about what's going on with The Voice, what the intention is, and have said, oh, I think I get it.
Yeah,
you know, and shifted back to, no, I want to support that. So the other thing that Milton said in Paradise Lost, now this poem was written in 1667, And it refers at some level to the great discussion about the devil and God. You know what I mean? It's rooted into that sort of time of living. But if we think about it in a contemporary way, what he says, the mind is its own place and in itself can make a heaven of hell, a hell of heaven. What he's really saying to us is that we have some responsibility to understand our own mind.
Yes.
And we need to hear what our mind wants to take us. Does it want to sit in disgruntlement and fear and ignorance? Or does it want to sit in knowledge and deep acceptance of others and a deep understanding of what it is to be fully human?
Okay.
So our minds...
Yeah.
Are agents of whether we experience what you were saying was the pleasure of life.
Yeah.
Gosh, it's going well, yeah. Despite the challenges that sometimes I face. Overall, you know, I'm framing it as I'm having the time of my life. Or you can go, everything is crap and I hate this world and I despise, you know what I mean? It's what we let our minds... without our intervention, without our presence,
true.
Can take us into all sorts of rubbishy places.
Yeah. True, yeah. Very yeah. true.
So that's what Milton is telling us. Yeah. And let's accept that this was written in 1667. Anyway, I have to declare that for me the voice is something that I'd support and I've read carefully. And I'm sort of kind of exploring in this poem my despair about the insufficiency of the debate that we've been having. Mm. And I own my own difficulty in that. The price of hubris and poisoned denunciation we will have to bear. The new darling, her chorus of prideful minders beaming at her discord and demolition of the long and arduous work. The behest of a coalition government. Tell us what you want, yearn for, we will listen. Indigenous stalwarts labouring for decades, their grace and grit together, crafting, assembling the story, a retelling of resilience, the refusal to die and wither. A refusal for the hastened demise sought from many indifferent to the wounds of a dispossession. The twisted legalism of terra nullius, a willful unseeing of a living race of indigenous peoples embedded in Gondwana for multiple millenniums. The long apprenticeship and learning, adapting to her ways, her patterns, her seasons, her disposition to a human presence. The vastness of landmass lending itself to a myriad of language groups unique to their space and time. Voiceless, unheard in this moment, our moment in time adds to the prior dispossession. Words arising from deep listening, quarried from a long experience, stepping out from misinformation, bias and ignorance, steeped in a postural superiority of progress and righteousness, presided by the one God in the overweening arc of Western dominance. Still, with reservation, doubt, a history of devaluation, the work is done, offering the statement from the heart. Sentiment that acknowledges ancestors past, present, and emerging. Generosity in offering their voice, a participation in the emergence of country, a covenant to unite and enshrine our indigenous with us, the new Arivists. To hear and pay heed to their needs. The warren of slogans, if you don't know, just say no. New man agog with booing while the wannabes opine a self-serving slurry of sensationalism and conspiracy.
Mm.
points to the explicit polarization from mateship and egalitarian worth to a sneering, swelling self-congratulation. Oh, the lucky country that Donald Horne reproached. Unthinking folk diminishing dignity with a trash can of Americanisms and Anglo imports. Our visionary collective voice is drowned in the wells of public opinion. Sorry time.
Mm. It's pretty powerful, man. Yeah. It's a good one.
I've certainly been having a lot of conversations with my peers and, you know, saying, what do people think? You know, I'm not going to judge what you have to say, but I'd like to hear what your opinions are. Yeah. And a lot of my friends are saying they're going to vote no. And I'm, okay,
yeah.
Tell me why. What's what are your reasonings behind that? Mm. And it's never really sort of made, it hasn't made much sense to me. Mm. Their arguments about what's going on. In my mind, it's about people very much having a voice, being able to say and give some direction to self-determination.
Mm. Let's make no mistake. For a start, let's hypothetically say the voice goes through. It's an advisory committee.
True.
To the government. So nobody really on the board of this vice or this advisory committee can make an ultimate decision that is what it's going to be. It then has to go through Parliament. It's got to go through Senator Hanson. It's got to go through all of the senators, Pocock, every one of them. Yeah. And then it's made in conjunction with the advisory or on the base of exactly what the advice and to go forward there. Now, what I guess has been shifting me or has been upsetting me or what I see through social media or what I hear in conversations and whatnot, regardless of what my stance is. You know, we had Melissa Stubbings come up, who's pretty much an auntie down there in Richmond, and she's against it. And she's a proud Aboriginal woman, and I heard her reasons, and they were very reasonable. And I say this time and time and time again. I mentioned it the other night at the men's table, although I was a little bit all over the place the other night, as I can be. And that is, just bring it back to what a five-year-old does. When a five-year-old goes to school, and we're in a multicultural country here, there's a Somalian, a Thai girl, an Indian girl, and little Vanessa is friends with all of them, okay? And they're black, yellow, white, brown, whatever. And they're best friends. And at the birthday party, all of her friends are multicultural.
Mm-hmm.
Because she doesn't understand the difference in, or she hasn't given, been corrupted or heard bad things about certain countries or watched stuff on the news of what happens there or seen some of the stuff that goes on in the Northern Territory, what the mayor of bloody Alice Springs is saying.
She has friendships without bias.
She has friendships without bias. Mm. Now, you know, we've got Cabramatta. It's a multicultural area, particularly large in the Vietnamese. And what a wonderful place to visit. What wonderful food.
You can get some great pho in Cabramatta. You can get some great pho in Katoomba too, by the way.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? And so when I saw this thing on this Lawson Locals and how I sat there and I've sort of over, because I get pretty passionate, as you can probably tell, I've gone over or past the anger side of it myself. And I don't understand the other side, regardless of what my position is on it. And I just thought, what's the natural kind response? What are you saying? You know, I put the argument to everyone at the table the other night.
Mm.
If you're a yes voter, would you put a sign out the front of your property?
Mm.
Of course you wouldn't. Mm. Well, many are. If you're a no voter, would you put a no sign out?
I've never seen one.
Why not? But if you're a Liberal voter, you put a Liberal sign out there. If you're a Labor voter.
Yeah.
So break down the argument behind that.
Yeah.
Are you worried? Are you scared? Do you think you'll be persecuted as being whatever? It's a great poem. And I think it plays to the heartstrings of many things. But let's say we still have to be kind and respectful to those that are saying no. And the aggression and the violence that we're seeing in these protests from both sides, it's not doing any favours but to divide us as a nation, to causing the fear. And the extreme of both sides of that argument is precisely what they're getting away from their own belief of their own right, of what they perceive as being the right thing to do, and only trying to break down the other person's perspective.
Yes.
And that's not... I think that's the only thing for me that's not right. Sorry.
Open your ears, people, and listen.
That's what Alan Watts says. This epoch of self-righteousness, zeal with which people would rather feel right,
yes,
than understand.
And it's like the... Exactly. It's like the argument, you know, Muz, you're entitled to your opinion no matter how wrong you are.
Yeah.
And we're going about it the same way. I mean, how arrogant and narcissistic is that? It's malignant. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Look, you know, I'd like to think as a nation, as we are, I think we're a pretty proud nation as Australians. I'd like to... You know, I've got some wonderful Indigenous friends, David King and Leon Anderson and Melissa Stubbings, and you know, and some wonderful, wonderful people doing so much in the community. And I look at a guy like Glenn Collis, okay, who's massive across his social media, and he doesn't bring this up, okay. And he's a very private man as far as his political views goes, ex-Australian boxing champion. But you know, it's dividing us.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what the result is in the end, and I hope whatever the result may be, that we can come together.
Yeah.
At the end of the referendum, and work together to help resolving some of these really complex issues.
Yeah.
You know, and the divide between modernity, between modern and traditional lifestyles, which I think is somewhat at the fundamental core of the problem. There's traditional communities trying to get on and being traditional in a modern world.
Yeah. I just got a text from a disgruntled listener who said, get back to mental health. Well, I think it's pertinent.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know...
By the end of it, we've all got to sort of... we do have to come together and work together as a community and be prepared to accept other people's perspectives, which we are. Mm. And as I said, I've had plenty of friends... say both yes and no, and I've listened actively. I've got members of my family who lived on country up in Arakoon, up in the Northern Territory. I've had to listen to what they've got to say. My stepmom, she works on country up in the Torres Strait on community as a remote area nurse, and I've had to listen to what she's got to say. And it's not always the same sorts of issues and things like that, and It's a complicated picture.
It is, you know, It's interesting. I see some of David King's stuff. You know how much it's impacting him.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. Yeah,
and he's just such a generous, giving, you know, man in the sense of what he does for community or country, as he says. It's not community. He gives to country. He gives to all of us. Anyway, it gets me. Still have that get fired up and impacted by it, but
watch this space.
I think we just need to sort of nip some of these behavioural patterns of anger and social media.
Yeah, I think that's what we're talking about. You can vote yes, you can vote no, but listen, pay attention to what everyone else has got to say, and you don't need to give them a hard time about it.
Yeah, you wouldn't hear Manly and Manly supporters against Parramatta supporters speaking about each other that way. And I grew up through the 80s. Used to say some pretty horrible stuff. It's certainly not as horrible as what's going on now. Because it impacts, it affects people. It shifts them. And let's be honest, that if you're getting a reaction where you're firing off something on a keyboard, that's not a nice thing to say, whether it's racial or whatever the reasons are. It's impacted you, it's made you angry, it's shifted your mental health.
Yeah. I guess, you know, the litmus test there is, would you say that to the person to their face?
Yeah.
If you're not going to say it to their face and have an argument or have a discussion, I should say, about that point,
I don't.
Then probably maybe you shouldn't be saying
it. And I don't make fun of, you know, Mike Tyson's lisp or anything like that, because I just wouldn't say it to his face.
That's right.
Hey, we've got some good events coming up. Zoe Taylor's coming on in a couple of weeks. A friend of hers father unfortunately took his life. We've got John Milham next week as well. So there'll be a pretty intense...
Always an interesting discussion.
Yeah, he brings it to the table. He's very passionate, isn't he? You know, and
he sure is. Very knowledgeable.
Yeah, much like this bloke opposite us here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which guy? Bodie. Yeah,
the Bodester.
Of course. Hey, by the way, Bodie.
Yes.
I asked Bodie, I don't know if you know this, I asked Bodie if he would be the subject for an application to the community portrait show.
Yeah.
And I went and interviewed Bodie and took some reference photos and discussed with him his history, and I thought he would be a good person to put in an application. So what I did was I wrote up a spiel about Bodie, about who he is and where he comes from.
Yeah.
And then I worked up a study, a drawing, showing Bodie in his fine form, in his colourful shirt, and posed in a powerful place.
And his wizardry looks.
Yeah. And actually, I spent about 3 days, four or five days working on this drawing.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And you know what? In the end, I wasn't happy with it.
Oh, no. But the drawing was okay. It was just Bodie.
And it came time to submit the drawing. And I thought, you know, I showed it to my dad. My dad's an artist. And he goes, oh, there's a couple of little things here that maybe are not quite right. I go, you're right. And it didn't sit well with me in the end. And I thought, if I submit this... And it doesn't get in, I'm going to be so pissed with myself that I actually even submitted it in the first place. And then I thought about, well, if I could submit something that was going to be absolutely awesome and be accepted, I know how I would go about it now. So in the end, I didn't submit.
Right.
I didn't submit the application. I completed the drawing. It's a great little drawing.
Yeah, cool.
But it's not the portrait that I thought in the end would get me entry into this show.
Okay.
Which will be a great show, no doubt, the Community Portrait Show at the Blue Mountains Cultural Centre.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to rework it, do a different piece with a different focus with you, and put something that I'm actually proud of into the show and that I have no doubts about. And then that way I'll know if I don't get entry into the show, it's not because of my drawing, it's because Bodie doesn't come up to the standard of the... of the person required to get in.
Yeah, that's my point exactly. Illustration is fine.
I don't want it to be any doubt, right? That it's not my fine work, that it's more about the subject as opposed to the portrait. I'm going to have to sit back down again with you and do some different stuff with you.
There's been some wonderful portraits or down there. It's just over the road.
No, it's just over the road at the Cultural Centre. It's a great show.
Yeah. I saw, Noel Pope from the Lawson Post Office used to be a sponsor of the show for 3 years or so. It was a wonderful portrait of him, and he likes to dress up in women's clothing. So he's in a lovely dress with his makeup and earrings, and it was an absolute cracker. There's some real, real characters.
Yeah,
and
I know David's been in the show. David King.
I
thought about using him as a subject, and then I said, "Would you be interested?" And he goes, "Yeah, totally." And I said, "Have you been in it before?" And he goes, "Yeah, I've been in it twice." Yeah. I forget it.
Yeah, yeah. Mate, I think Buddy. Perfect.
Yeah. Well, actually, because I initially wanted the two of you together, but I didn't know whether they would actually do that.
No.
They have actually got back to me since then and said, you can do two people.
Oh, right.
So I may end up calling on your services, Mr. Spillane, get the two of you together.
You've got to get the stripes on your arm before you become sergeant, mate. You've got to put in the years, and he's done phenomenal amount of years for community and what
he's... I think you're there. I think you're there.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, I think so too.
We'll see. But wow, man.
That's why you're not going to see it in the show. Next year, you wait.
Yeah.
Look, the listener who says, why don't you guys get back to mental health? I suppose I hear what you're saying. You'd rather that we reflect on mental health in a conventional sort of kind of way, looking after yourself, looking after the way you think and feel, and and you know that's always sort of part of our work. But I think there's something about being fair, and this you know what I've loved about Australia is its sense of mateship and its sense of egalitarian worth, which really means respecting and understanding a vision, a shift, which grows Australia. Now, we owe much to America and we owe much to Western thought, but we also have an indigenous wisdom that's been distilled. And I guess my view is that the indigenous wisdom, I want to hear more of it. And if the voice is the means by which we start to hear the distilled knowledge, you know, from the indigenous voice, that does lead to an increasingly an Australian understanding that borrows from our mateship that we have developed and borrows from our egalitarian sense of mutual respect for all of us, with that indigenous understanding, that's our real voice. That's our real Australian voice. And I think our mental health derives from our cultural diversity and cultural acceptance of each other, and that is mental health as much as following a program for healing oneself from depression or anxiety.
It's interesting.
I guess we should be looking at wrapping it up. It's been a good show, lads, and well said today, Bodie and Christian, on the mark, mate, and thanks for coming on here, making yourself vulnerable again and opening up and sharing with us that wonderful story of, you know.
Well, that's what it is. It's all about sharing our stories, isn't it? You know, when we share our stories with each other and we are stronger for it.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting, isn't it, that we often on the show we say that true humility and being vulnerable is the doorway into mental health.
Yeah.
Now, we're so much of our language is language to resilience and strength and tell it as it is and that sort of strong, robust, masculine sort of kind of posture. But it's ultimately an old understanding of well-being.
Yeah.
And I think that what we are beginning to sort of sit in is the new paradigm that mental health also acknowledges suffering, grief and loss, vulnerability, our depressions, our fumbles in life. To be truly human is to sit in that, as well as our insights that derive from deep experience. And in 100 years' time, I'm pretty sure, I'm not an oracle, but I'm pretty sure that we'll have a greater familiarity with vulnerability, with grief and loss, and recognize that this obeisance to progress, as enunciated by the Western model, has led us into a direction of our self-abnegation. We're going to fall apart. That we have to sort of start to step back from this altar of progress and sit in another way of thinking about what it is to be fully human. And I'm dying for those conversations. I'm wanting those conversations.
We can't get around like a bull in a china shop all the time and not be breaking crockery. If we lead our lives like we are a bull in the china shop and just barging our way plowing through our social relationships and corralling people into what we want them to do and how you know they should be obedient to our wants and needs instead of sitting back and listening and playing a subtle game and a fluid and flexible game.
Yeah, I often finish the show and say, let's just practice a little bit more kindness or know, less judgment to one another. And, you know, Bodie comes in and articulates or goes into depth of what it is to be kind or less judgmental. Someone said to me the other day, hey, man, have you been doing this for some time now? you know, what's the secret behind it? What do you, and for me, it's, you know, it's that time of giving to others. I've become a better listener. I've become, I've grown more as a man, and it just becomes really easy to do this when you've got two blokes opposite you that are much smarter than
well,
you are.
That's,
you
know? I don't know about that.
And that's something that I'm eternally grateful for
something,
both of you. Thank
something
you.
That you realise in life too is that as we learn, the more you realise, the less we know.
Yeah.
Okay. So as you begin to study, as you begin to study and listen to people and pay attention, and open yourself to the world, the more you'll understand that we have really very little understanding and knowledge of what is going on. And that opens us up to further understanding and further learning. And if you close yourself down to learning and development, then and you're assured that you know everything, then you're missing out.
And then as my old man would say, put the encyclopedias out on the front lawn and said, not needed anymore, free to a good home. Eldest son knows everything. Have a good week, everyone. We'll be back next week. A big thanks to Christian Mortensen. Thanks, mate. The Moose.
Thank you. Yeah.
And to you, Boadster. Good show, boys. Next week, John Milham. We are a terrific show having Johnny on. I like seeing John and Bodie go with each other. It's a good dynamic, so it'll be wonderful. And you'll be back.
I'll be back.
You know,
I've got a few weeks leave. We're heading off in the camper van, do some camping.
Awesome.
That sort of thing. And then I'll gather some stories and tales of
never
life afar. And then I'll bring them back.
All good. It's the Men's More Mental Health Show. Thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for having me.
And a big thanks to 89.1 RBM FM. We'll see you next week. All the best, guys.